Blog Talk Radio.
Women have always had a steeper climb up the ladder of corporate success, but the stakes today are even greater than ever. Career strategy expert and national thought leader Dr. Ella Edmondson-Bell will deliver a frank and laser-focused message to all who need to understand new tactics in a bold new career marketplace. She's the author of a new book, Career GPS, Strategies for Women Navigating the New Corporate Landscape. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. You're in for a great show today. You're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Welcome to the show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. We're glad that you are here. I'm not sure if you're in the Northeast or wherever you are. I hope you don't have a lot of snow on the ground. We thought spring was coming, and hopefully it will come back in the next couple of days. I'm out and about here in the Boston area in a recreational area, so if you hear a little splashing of a pool or some basketballs dribbling, you'll know exactly where I am. Just wanted to add a little atmosphere today to our show. I'm really excited because I have known our guest speaker for probably close to 20 years, and I always look at her as a bold, courageous career strategist, academician, and someone who is never afraid to tell the truth, as she will do today, talking to women during Women's History Month, and I'm really excited to bring Ella Bell on the air with us. Hello, Ella. Welcome to the show. Hello. I think we have both of you on. I hope we have you on the air now. Ella, are you with us? All right, let me just try this again. Ella Bell, are you with
Helen,
us, Ella?
Helen, can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you?
Girl, I was so upset. I couldn't get through. Hi.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you're with us today. And I'm sure
I
we have maybe
so
a couple other people
to be
in
with you.
Who are on the line. I'm so glad you're here. And I'm really glad that you've written this book along with your other books. I was telling our audience that I've known you for almost 20 years. You're always cutting edge. You always have something to say that is relevant and cogent. So congratulations on this brand new book.
Thank you so much. It is such, you know, I consider this girlfriend catch-up time, okay?
That's right. That's right. Even though we're on the air, we're going to let everybody get caught up on our relationship that goes back to the early 90s.
Okay, I can exhale because it was like, oh, God, I can't get through. Hi, I am delighted to be on your show. I'm so thrilled that you have a show and you're doing what you're doing and making a difference and connecting. And all I can say is, wow.
Thank you. Well, the feeling is mutual because I know you have been out there just putting down truthful paths of career enhancement for women for an awfully long time. I'll tell my audience, I remember back in the early days when I was on the board of the National Black MBA Association, and
yes.
You and Stella were at
yeah.
one of our conventions, and I was helping you collect surveys. You were actually trying to poll some of our members for one of your earlier books. So
take us
back to those days. Yeah.
I remember.
Take us back to those days and that particular project that you were working on.
We called it the Women's Life Study Project, and mm-hmm. we were really lucky. In those days, you could get funding from the Rockefeller Foundation to do research around women-centered issues.
Right.
And we also got money from the Ford Foundation. So we were really, really, really lucky. And I was teaching at MIT at the Sloan School at the time, and they even contributed. So it was at the right time and the right moment. What we really wanted to do was much of the research that talked to women in management was quite honestly about the white woman's experience and her
mm-hmm.
story. And there was very little, like if you looked at Breaking the Glass Ceiling,
right.
I think there was one African-American woman interviewed in that story
uh-huh.
and that for that book. And her story really wasn't reflected at all. All the other books, Hardeem's books, all the other books, including Hardeem's The Woman Manager and all that,
mm-hmm.
none
mm-hmm.
of our stories as African-American women or Latino women or Asian women were mentioned. So we thought it was important to see if there was a difference, number one. Number two, what was their journey to corporate America?
because we're still talking about a time period where it was pretty unusual for women to wind up in a corporate setting. So how did you get there? What kind of messages did you get as a child, as a girl, that let you go in that direction? What was the process of getting in, number two? What was your experience once you got in? And then the fourth thing was, what was the relationship that you had with white women? And I think that was the most provocative piece of the study, because what we found was that, from what we could tell, there was very little relationship, connection, allies, building really authentic relationships between these two groups of women.
And that was less than 20 years ago, too.
Right, and their experiences, were somewhat different. White women feeling like they were a part of the team and feeling that they had some value, and the black women feeling like they were guests and had very little value at all and had to fight for everything.
Now let me fast forward and ask you, and I'll tie this in with your new book, because I'm sure that early research, the origins of the new book are in the research that you've done in the past. If you were to ask those same questions today, do you think the answers would be any different? Would they be changed? What do you think the reactions would be with today's women, both black and white, in the workplace, just based on the historical points that you put down back in the 90s?
Okay. I'm going to reframe it a little bit, because when the book came out, and I think the book came out in 2002 or 1, somewhere in there, what Harvard Business School told us was that they were curious to see if younger women would respond to Our Separate Ways. Here's the big aha. Not only did younger women respond, but a greater demographic of younger women responded. So I started hearing from Middle Eastern women who talked about being in corporate America and not getting any support. I started hearing from Asian women talking about their isolation from all groups of women. I started hearing from younger black women that basically said, ain't nothing changed. Heard from younger white women that said, you know, I'm feeling really isolated and I can't get a good mentor either. So as I started going, you know, doing the book tour and really getting out there, what we found was that it wasn't just black women who were being impacted. It was all women that were being impacted.
All women.
And that's when I started working with Carol Levin's Working Mother magazine, and she put together the best companies for women of color.
Right.
I created that list. They already had the list of best companies for working mothers. Now this is the best companies for women of color. Because what we were all discovering was that if you looked at the pipeline, if you looked at succession plans, there were a few white women there. I'm not going to say that white women have reached utopia, because they certainly have not either as a group. But when you started looking at who was in the pipeline and succession plans, women of color were just multicultural women were not there. It was an afterthought. And they were being lumped, like the Hispanic women were being lumped with the Hispanic men. The Asian women were being lumped with the Asian men. And while the men were making progress, the women were not.
Women weren't. Interesting. So I guess that is that's the backdrop for Career GPS, if I sort of fast forward you to why Career GPS is the successor to your previous book, Our Separate Ways.
I think Our Separate Ways really was groundbreaking. It was the first book to really talk about in a professional context the relationship between black and white women and really unpack that a little bit.
Okay.
It was the first book that really distinguished on a professional corporate context what happens to African-American women and to tell their journey, their life journey. I think that was significant and had not been done. With Career GPS, my head was in a different place. After 8 years of hearing the stories of why we can't get ahead and what we need to do, you know, I had to ask myself, okay, after all of this, do you know anything as an academic, as a scholar, as a thought leader about what works? And that's what Career GPS is. Here's what I know based on all the time I've spent in the corporate arena, all the time I've spent as an academic and working with women. This is what I know works.
Okay. Now, tell us, now, again, there's just there's so much. I encourage every woman to go out and get this book because it's a great guide. And one of the things that you have in here, you talk about the Performance Review Survival Guide. Talk to us about that, and I'll tell you why, because as a diversity professional, having me worked in this field for 24 years, one of the biggest blows that can come to particularly a person of color is the perception that he or she may have going into the job and working the job, but then, in some cases, the shock value when they actually get their evaluation and it's not nearly what they thought it was going to be. So can you share us some of the insights that you have with this section of your book?
Well, I think the first thing is you don't start the review process at the review.
Okay.
That's where the shock comes in. The review process starts when you get the assignment going in. When you're really talking to your manager, what are the expectations?
Okay.
What kind of support will I need? I always say look at financial resources, look at people resources, look at technical resources, look at logistical resources, because you're going to need all four to be successful in whatever task that you're giving. If you're assigned to a team project, you know, what are the expectations on the team? How are you going to deliver and how do you want to make the team look good as well as you? That conversation needs to be held up front. Also, here's what I need to do from you. I want to be able, as the manager, to run ideas by you. I want to learn from your wisdom. I think what we do as women, we don't know how to ask for help. We don't know how to run an idea by, because one, I know in my life, I'm always fearful that I'm going to look incompetent or stupid. So I'm going to show you how I can do this all by myself. Men don't have that hang up.
It's a bigger mess sometimes, right?
You know, men don't have that hang up. Men will go, you know, while they're talking, you know, let me run this idea. What do you think? And I noticed when you did that, and they don't have all the baggage around, okay, how am I going to look or how am I going to appear? So they get feedback, which looks like, you know, it's more of a collaborative process. Even if you have a manager that is not talkative, is more of an email type of person, doesn't like to do a lot of FaceTime, you know, always shoot an email. This is what I'm doing. This is how, what do you think? And you don't have to do it every week. You know, do it monthly so that, you know, you've got a clear communication going. You have a clear understanding of the expectation. You have saved all your documentation. Here's what got achieved. Here's how well it looked. Here's the feedback we got. Be honest. Here's what we could have done better.
So when you what I'm hearing you say is that you're basically structuring an evaluation at the very beginning that will give you the kind of outcome that you're looking for.
Exactly. And what you want to do is at the time that you go in for that feedback, you want to be able to role play with somebody, one of your allies, if you will, you or your mentor. You want to run by, okay, here's how I'm going in. Here's what I've done. Here's what I've done really great. Here's what I still need to work on. Here's, you know, and the other part of this, here's where I see my career going, and I want to make sure I'm on track.
Right.
It's
right.
not that I want this job or that job, but here's where I see my going. I want to make sure I'm on track. That's the conversation you want to have, and you want to go in open. You want to spend 80% of your time listening. You know, once you, here's my case, here's how I see it, here's what I've done, now you want to shut up a little bit, be quiet, keep still, have an open body language and say, okay, what's your spin and what's your take? Because I want to know how I can do it even better.
Well, again, this is preparation, and in part of the book where you talk about this, you talk about documenting, and the importance of that, which, again, some people do either in a reactionary mode if something has happened or they get a sense that their evaluation is not going to be very strong, and then they begin that process. But you're saying you need to really start doing that up front.
You need to do that up front. And the other thing is, and Laura Roberts talks about this. She teaches in our Ascent program. She's phenomenal. She talks about push on what you do well.
Mm-hmm.
And figure out in that conversation with your manager in that 360, figure out what you do well,
mm-hmm.
and then figure out how you can build on it. What we often do is we go in and everybody wants to focus on the negative. Focus on what you do well and say, okay, if I'm doing it well, how do I apply what I do there in those areas where I need to strengthen myself?
So you accentuate your strengths and you
exactly.
minimize your weaknesses versus what many women do, and I'm guilty of it also, we emphasize what we don't do well and we dwell too long on the weaknesses instead of really bolstering up the strengths.
And I think you bolster up the strengths, but don't shy away because the learning, here's the key learning. The learning, if it's good and authentic, the learning is often in the weaknesses.
Hmm.
But
so
what I want to do is I want to apply what I do well, that process, if you will. I want to apply that process to the area that I want to stretch it, the area I want to grow in, the area I need to develop in, what I call the growth edge. I think when we start talking about weaknesses and all that, it gets us in serious trouble.
Oh, it does, because we start focusing on it.
They
wait
start focusing
off,
on it, and then you just dig your little heels in, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Right. I want to talk to us now about when you should lead, and this is important because there are some of our contemporaries, particularly those who have been on the job 10, 15, maybe 20-plus years, and things aren't what they used to be with the company, and they're faced with a dilemma. Now, these are people who have mortgages. They've got responsibilities. Maybe they've got kids going off to college. They've got parents to take care of. So in those instances, Dr. Ella Bell, when should you leave?
First rule of thumb, if you are absolutely miserable, if you are going in and you are depressed, you are angry, you just don't like being there, your breathing changes, your stomach tightens, it's time to start looking for a new job. If you continually get passed over, what we know, particularly for African-American women and sometimes Hispanic women, the longer they stay in the company, the longer it takes them to get promoted. I have seen women leave a company, go to another company, and then get recruited back.
Wow.
Sometimes you have to leave to prove yourself.
Right, right.
Look for a lateral move.
Profound.
I think one of the mistakes
the
that we...
You're saying with the longer you stay, and if you're black or Latino, the longer you stay, the longer it takes for you to get promoted. That's
oftentimes
very insightful. Very insightful.
That's what the research has told us thus far. I will say also look for lateral moves, both within the company and in other companies. Sometimes we are always trying to rise up. It's good now as companies become less siloed to learn a lot about a company, to get as much knowledge, understanding, and skills and tools in your toolkit so that
right.
you really can manage on a superior level. And that means some lateral changes. So don't be afraid to go lateral. I'm not saying go lateral all the time, but there's but so much room at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So look at lateral both within your company and across the industry, because if you're not getting feedback that's not, you know, boy, we're going to move you, we're thinking about advancing you, and it's not happening within a reasonable time span. Now, understand that reasonable time span in this economy is longer for everybody.
Exactly.
Understand
right.
that.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Understand that you just came into a company and you think you're going to get promoted and moved in 6 months to a year.
Right.
That
right.
probably is not going to happen
That's
for anybody.
Unrealistic.
It's very
unrealistic.
Very unrealistic.
And
also understand that the grass is not always greener on the other side.
Even if it comes with a bigger benefits package and more money, it may mean more problems.
It may mean more problems, and it might be what I call a good horse and pony, but it's not real.
So I always tell people to really look, do your research before you move. Really look to see and learn as much as you can about the company, the industry, the power players. Do your research. But don't stay in a position where you're feeling that you can't show your creativity, you can't show your leadership, and the signals are definitely, okay, we're tolerating you. No, you don't have to do that.
Good advice, and we're talking to Dr. Ella Bell. She is an award-winning writer, author, academician. Her new book is Career GPS, Strategies for Women Navigating the New Corporate Landscape. And Dr. Bell is a professor at the Business School, Associate Professor of Business Administration at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth University.
Yeah.
Also, her previous book was On Separate Ways. And she's been traveling between New Hampshire and North Carolina for a long time, correct?
11 years.
Wow.
11 years. Would you believe?
That's
who would have known? Who would have thunk?
Now, so are you doing any teaching in North Carolina or all your
I'm on faculty full-time at Tuck. I teach in the fall and I teach in the winter. This year I'm on sabbatical, so I only taught in the fall. I run my ASCENT program, which is a not-for-profit organization for advancing multicultural women, and that's all women in the workplace. We have an a wonderful executive program that Tuck is in partnership with. So I'm feeling that's been a good fit for me.
Pretty happy.
They understand the need. I mean, it's a crazy life trying to balance. But I'm a Southern girl by roots, and I need my little Southern experience on a regular basis to keep me grounded. And I want to
talk to you about that because, again, in your book, in the new book, Career GPS, you give a word of advice to single women. And talk to us about the section where you had to make your list of your friends and you thought you had 50-some-odd friends and ended up having little more than maybe a handful and the relocation.
You know, I would only answer this for you. You know that. That's real personal, making me go deep like this. I'm going to get you when I see you.
But it's in your book.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
I told my on my own self. Well, you know, we do this exercise, and it's called a life map.
Yeah.
And it's looking at your life. And it's really laying out all your relationships in your life and those that are important. And I remember when I was a graduate student at Case Western in the doctoral program, we did this exercise in one of our classes. And I had like 20 zillion relationships. I was young and had college friends, high school friends, everywhere
right.
I had lived. I mean, it was just a rich, overly complex map of relationships. Some that were really good for me and some that were not. Well, fast forward, after graduate school, teaching and in my third academic position at MIT, and I'm teaching this to a class, and I decide I'm going to do one for myself. And lo and behold, I look down, and my relationships that were probably like 100 are now like 5. And the most significant relationship to me is my 14-year-old dog, Doobie, who was hanging in there. You remember Doobie, who was hanging in there. I think the dog was scared to die because it was like, my mommy is going to be all by herself. That dog lived to be 19 years old, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
It's hysterical. But that really... That just turned it around, just that simple exercise. I remember I was at the Bunting Institute up at Radcliffe. Stella and I were there together, and I looked at Stella after doing this exercise, and I said, you know what? I got to make a change. I'm 46. I really would like to have children in my life. I can't have them, but I can be in a community where there are children. My spiritual life is flat. I don't have girlfriends, except you, and you're living somewhere else. And I'm like, you know what? I got to get a life. Because, you know, if I don't get one, I don't have a house. I don't have my own house. I don't have my little garden that I wanted. And that's when I just said, okay, I stepped off the fast track. I took a position at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, nobody had heard of, left MIT, brought myself a house,
and was pretty content. School was not the best fit for me, but it was a life question. So I found a godchild, got my garden, found a great church, good community, great weather, and here comes Dartmouth. You know, and I'm like, no, I'm not going back up to Iceland. No way, Jose. But you know what I found? I found that you can create a life that can be fulfilling. I did, as I told the dean there, I can't martyr my personal life anymore for my career. Can't do that. And I think at times we martyr our career life or our professional life, our professional life and our personal life for one or the other. And I was like, nope, I can't. I've got to have a life. And I still have to work at that. I think that is my major lesson, quite honestly. But the reality
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Huh? It's okay. To me, it was trying to build a more holistic life. So now I have two really great communities that I live in where I feel like I have family, friends, people that know me. I have community. I have community in both places, and that's really, really important.
That's important. That really
and
is.
And now as I get older, it's like, okay, wait a minute, let's slow it down, because community is becoming even more important. Spirituality is becoming even more important. Staying fit is even becoming more important. I think, you know, some of us who are so ambitious and career-oriented, you know, I can check those boxes so well, but it's like, okay, you've got some flat boxes over here.
I look at it really as quadrants in your life, and that all of us need to have we need to have activity in all four quadrants, which include work and include the financial income building opportunities that you have, but it also has to include some personal desires that you have or need, as well as spiritual. So I look at it very much like you in terms of these various quadrants. It's a great way for you to close out your book, because you give these great tips at the beginning, showing women where they can go and where they can grow, but then you round it out and you give that balancing act, and you reveal a little bit more in that closet that you know, normally people would be very buttoned up like you and wouldn't want to do that. So
I think everybody looks at, well, people look at me and say, oh man, you've got it all.
No, you're like everybody else, and
we're all struggling with these issues, and we don't have women in our generation, and I think the younger women, you are blessed because you've got role models to look at. You know, even though we might be screwing it up, you got role models. We don't have role models per se. Women who were really had access to the corporate world or the academic world. I mean, my mother had a seventh grade education. She couldn't phantom a Yale or an MIT work experience. And I've got all these wonderful places under my belt, and it's like, well, wait a minute, I don't have a role model on how to create a life. And I think for many of us, you know, we're told since the time we're born that Prince Charming is going to come around. Well, sometimes he does, and sometimes he doesn't come. And I think what we've got to do is to let women know you can still have a vital, happy, joyful life. And you've got to go in the closet to tell those stories. I mean, you just have to.
Well, you've done it so beautifully with this wonderful book. And,
well, thank
and your,
you.
Your schedule has been off the hook, so I'm so happy to have you on the show today. And I'm also giving a big shout-out, speaking of balance, to my daughter and my son-in-law, because early this morning at midnight, 12:09, my second granddaughter was born, little Gabrielle.
Where?
So that's all. In West Hartford, Connecticut, actually at Hartford Hospital. So
I know you are getting in the car.
I will this weekend. So hats off to Lorna and Jerome and little Juliana, who's now going to be a big sister to her little sister, Gabrielle. But you said, I mean, this is a great place to end the show, which we're going to do in about a couple of seconds. Want to thank you, Ella Bell, for keeping it real, as you always do, with Career GPS, a terrific book, Strategies for Women Navigating the New Corporate Landscape. Hats off to you and all the things that you're doing. And we want to say thanks so much for listening to this show. We'll be back next week with a brand new program talking about important issues. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and Focus on Empowerment is always trying to make it real and keep it real for each and every one of you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Carol.